Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. The January 2021 Roundup is brought to you by Fun Again Games. And 2021 is off to a wild start, definitely. I mean, if we're not dealing with insurrection in the Capitol, well, the board game industry has had quite a few controversial moments that have been bumping up all over the place. And I'm not going to be talking about any of that stuff today. But if you'd like to hear Jen's and my take on it, well, you can check out the next episode of the podcast, Rotto Talks Through Episode 69, where Jen and I will go over all of that non-gaming stuff in the gaming industry, including our decision to continue to support Fun Again Games. So if you have questions about all that, check out the podcast. You can hit that I in the top right corner of the screen or go follow the show notes and we can carry on a conversation about that there. But today, it's just about games. Let's have some fun because there were a bunch of great games we played in January. Let's not delay any longer. I'm going to jump over to PowerPoint and start talking about one of two games that Shay covered this month, Carnegie. Now, this was a paid Kickstarter for a game that I believe is still live on Kickstarter right now. And I'll be honest, I am so jealous of Shay. I definitely wanted to cover this one myself because it's from designer Javier George, who is one of my favorite designers of all time. You know, Twa and Gengopolis and Carson City. And this is a big, new, sprawling industrialization of North America game. And it's got one of the coolest new action selection mechanisms. It's not exactly worker placement. It's more kind of like worker movement. And it's all about recruiting. And it's got a healthy dollop of, oh, when I do an action, other players get to follow on. It's got a lot of neat stuff. And like I said, I wanted to cover it. But the timing just didn't work out. So Shay stepped up. And he made me all the more jealous because he's still got the prototype right now. And I want it, my precious. But I'll have to wait. He does kind of work for me. I guess I could make him send me the prototype back. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Carnegie, you can go check out his run through to see more. It's a very, very cool game from designer Javier George. And he had one other game that he covered in January, Under Falling Skies, which I'm also kind of jealous about because it looks great. It's basically a dice worker placement game. You roll the dice, you place them, and all with the purpose of trying to run an underground bunker that is missile command style, fighting off waves of space aliens. This is basically a Space Invaders style game. And the reason I didn't cover it, because again, it looks great, is it's solo only. And I wish this had a cooperative mode. Publisher CGE, please give us a cooperative expansion for Under Falling Skies. It would totally work. Each of us controlling our own bunkers, but fighting the same aliens. Oh my gosh. But it's, again, check out Shay's run through. It is a blast. You can just tell he was having fun demoing it for us in the run through. And it's just really clever, very sharp, lots of puzzly dice mitigation and manipulation to fight really cool little plastic space alien pieces. Really neat stuff, Under Falling Skies. And those were Shay's two games. We don't have anything from Ryan this month, but I believe he'll be back in the next roundup because he's got some stuff lined up for February, if I recall correctly. But now we leave the contributor section and we go into the expansions, where I'm going to start counting down from my least favorite expansion we played to my most favorite expansion. And so that starts with number 6, Morel's Foray. And now, Morels is a game my wife and I really adore. A very sharp, fun, fast little two-player-only game about traipsing through the woods, finding mushrooms and cooking them up to score victory points. And Foray, it does a couple of things. One, it adds a 3- and 4-player mode, which is of no use to me and Jen, but I could certainly see it's worth getting just for that if you want to share this wonderful game with other players, as it should be, because it's such a great game. Now, Foray also adds a bunch of new cards that you can mix and match and throw into the main deck, so you have lots of other ways to score points and manipulate the trail you're walking and all kinds of stuff. And I thought they were all very, very cool. But fair warning, if you do get foray, take the rules at their word when they say, do not mix all the modules up all at once. Because we did that, and it was overwhelming. And it kind of, took away from some of the beautiful, wonderful elegance of the core game. So I definitely look forward to trying it again, but next time I think I won't just throw everything in the kitchen sink in, just to pick one or two of the, I forget, there's over a half a dozen different modules you can throw into the game. So it's just fun to play Foray again, or Morales again, and I believe Foray, again, must have if you're looking for three or four players, or if you just played so much Morales, you're looking for something new, it could be something you might want to check out. But like I said, don't throw everything in all at once. It's over the top. But anyway, we move on to my number five, Wingspan Oceania, which introduces a ton of new birds to Wingspan, a ton of new powers, which you would expect. That's what the last expansion did. But it also gives new player boards that I think a lot of people be very excited about because it kind of nerfs eggs. Now, I don't subscribe to the commonly held notion in some corners of the internet that Wingspan is broken because all you do is just spam eggs over and over and over again and that's how you win. I don't believe that's true. I believe eggs are strong, but you're not playing very well if you can't come up with a strategy that's even stronger than just, oh, I guess I'll get more eggs. But if you're a player who is bothered by that, the egg power relative to the other engines has been tweaked and balanced a bit. So you really have to invest much more heavily in eggs to get the maximum return out of it. And I do think, overall, that is a strong improvement to the game. It's not necessary. It's optional. But I think it's good. I love the new board as well. There's one other thing it adds. A new resource type. Nectar. As always with Elizabeth Hargrave, there's lots of really great thematic explanations for why she pulls stuff into her games. I absolutely love that. It makes the theme come to life even more. And the way nectar works because of its importance in the food chain for birds in the Oceania area is great. I have one complaint, though. I think nectar, at least from our experience with it so far, is maybe... It's not broken in any way, but it's so powerful because when you get nectar, it's a wild resource that can stand in for anything else. And if you ever have the option to get, when you're drafting dice, if there's nectar, you better grab it because it's going to go quick. And it's so good, it just eclipses anything else. And to be fair, nectar does have one downside, which is if you do collect nectar, you have to use it by the end of the round or you lose it. In practice, that's a cool idea, but Jen and I found that that was not a reason for us to ever not take nectar and prioritize it above everything else. And to be fair, when we played with nectar, we scored our highest scoring games ever. I've never come this close to completely filling up the entire board with 15 birds because things were just so much easier with all this wild card stuff coming at us. And so I have mixed feelings about that. It was nice. It was a very powerful feeling, but it really feels like it kind of guts some of the tension and angst-inducing compromises you have to make in the game. You don't have to make as many compromises when you've got lots of wild cards. So I've got mixed feelings about them. I mean, again, I don't think they're broken at all. They just change the feeling of the game, and it loses some of the struggle that used to be there, and things just become a little bit easier going, which is why it didn't rank higher. But still, we had a great time, and there's a lot of great birds. And if you don't want to use the nectar, the rules talk about how you can leave them out, and just you have to leave out, I forget, like 6 or 12 new birds that do nectar-related stuff. So overall, a great expansion for, as always, a fantastic game, Wingspan. Then we go on to number 4, Post-Human Saga, The Journey Home, which was another paid preview. It's actually going live on Kickstarter in the first week of February if you want to see this. But basically, Post-Human Saga is already a very interesting adventure game because it crosses heavily thematic gameplay like what you would see in a zombie side or an Eldritch Horror with really heavy, thinky, puzzly Euro-style gameplay mechanisms. Because that's Heart. It's a tile-laying game that just looks like a big, sprawling narrative adventure game. And so I thought the original was great, but this expansion, the number one thing it does, it adds new characters and new adventure books and new items, all kinds of stuff. But the most important thing it does is it fundamentally changes the way quest victory points are earned. And the questing, which before was very laid back and really just kind of lets you just go and do whatever you want. You're going to get get this quest finished, don't worry. Now you have to work really hard to finish these quests. And you're in much more of a race, because before, I have my quest, you have your quest. Hey, if we finish our quest first, I might get more points than you. But there wasn't really that much tension. Now, the main, I forget what they're called, the mission or environment cards, they're on public display, and they are first come, first served. Much like how recon works. And so, there's a lot more tension. The race is much more present than it was in the past. And it's interesting, too, before, if you were going for quest points, you could still work on your recon. Now, being able to be successful at recon tile scoring and terrain tile scoring is much more challenging, because they really kind of conflict with each other. And again, all of this combines to make the game... It's kind of the opposite of what I just said about Wingspan. The Wingspan expansion added stuff to make the game more loose and laid back and easy going. Journey Home makes Posthuman Saga a tenser, tighter, tougher puzzle to solve. And I thought it was fantastic. That was and you'll see, I am covering it when the Kickstarter goes live. Again, I think this week, if I recall correctly. But that was my number four, Posthuman Saga, The Journey Home. Then we go on to number three, Smartphone Inc. Update 1.1, which is the name of the expansion. Update 1.1, because it's all about smartphones, and you're always getting updates for your smartphones, right? It's clever. So, this is great. Smartphone Inc. was already a fantastic business simulation. One of the best ones that's come out in years. One of the best ones of modern business simulation since Pret-a-Porter. And to me, that's very, very high praise. But having played the update 1.1, I would never go back to a regular smartphone. I did not appreciate how much room there was for improvement, because the main thing Update 1.1 offers is a new tightened up board, where instead of spreading our smartphone domination around the world, we're just kind of focusing on North American continent. And so the board is much tighter. And Jen and I found it very satisfying and very compelling and very challenging in a fun way to try to scrabble and grab market share. In regular smartphone, if you're playing as a two-player game, the world's very big. And even though you have those retailers that tighten it up, there's just not that much interplay between players. But Jen and I really enjoyed it here quite a bit. And then on top of that, it adds a bunch of new special business abilities. And it's just a great, great expansion. It's worth getting just for the Titan board alone. But also then, not just being stuck with the same, six special power tiles. I think there's double the number, so there's just so much more replayability now, and new special powers like your CEO who can move around from place to place and give you access to certain things. Like I said, Smartphone Inc. was already fantastic. This just makes it better, especially for lower player count. It's my number three of the month, Smartphone Inc. Update 1.1. Then we go on to number two. And hey, what's a monthly roundup without another visit from Marvel Champions? And this time, I played Wasp. I didn't get to play it with Jen, unfortunately. I've got Quicksilver, and I'm looking forward to playing that. Maybe she'll play it with me in February. I'm always hoping to not play Marvel Champions solo. But either way, I had a fun time playing it. Wasp is the newest character. And like Ant-Man before her, her character card is extra cool because it's regular card size when you are in, Wasp, little tiny, shrunk down size or just regular human size, but you can fold the card open and make it double size to become a super giant character. And it was very, very cool with Ant-Man. It's super cool with Wasp. And it's interesting, Wasp is definitely has a different feel. She is much more about very just quick, super hard-hitting events that just smack the enemies down really, really hard, but no real long-term investments are building up. A lot of characters have almost kind of like an engine to them where you get certain things out that generate resources for you. No, what she does instead is she just has these really big heavy hitters you use and then they're discarded. But I think she's got one of the coolest alter ego powers of any character I've seen so far. When she sits back into her day clothes and becomes a super smart scientist, head of girl, she has the ability to grab her super powerful event cards out of her discard pile and shuffle them back into the deck. So you can get to your really big hits and you can cycle. It's like your entire character is an engine, and it makes her normal human side, her alter ego persona, so much more important. I found myself constantly switching. Another interesting thing, too, is she's got, the shrunk down size and the big size. The big size is generally pretty good. The shrunk down size is not that great unless you've got the right cards in hand. So there's just a lot more synergy. There's a lot more concert between her three forms. And I think that's fantastic. And I had a great time playing her. Marvel Champions, the Wasp expansion. But my number one expansion for the month is Aeon's End, Legacy of Gravehold, which is another paid Kickstarter preview. The Kickstarter's launching, I think, in late February. And full disclosure, Jen and I are only halfway through the campaign. Now, we're a little bit more than halfway through. I think there's 9 total missions to finish the campaign, and then it becomes effectively a standalone game that you can continue play and mix and match with other Aeons in, just like the previous Aeons in Legacy. Legacy of Gravehold is a blast. We are loving it. As always, tons of really cool, new, exciting ideas. I don't know how the developers keep coming back with new twists on bosses, new twists on characters, and if there's one thing you gotta know about Legacy of Gravehold, this is basically Endgame. Or this is the Aeon's equivalent of Avengers Endgame, because this is the culmination of a story that has been building up for years now with all the different Aeons in, as the two factions of humanity, New Gravehold and Azure, finally realize, you know, it's or another way you could call it Aeon's End Civil War, because this does tell two different sides, depending on which faction you back right from the get-go. Are you going to be on the side of Gravehold or Azure as you play through a story and everybody comes back? I forget. There's something like 21 mages in this box. Or check out the Kickstarter page when it goes live. It's something like that. A ton of them. And they've all but two of them, I think, have been totally redesigned with new powers, new skills. They just blew the doors out. And like I said, this is the board game equivalent of the Endgame movie, where everything comes together, everybody's on the field, and it's the biggest, most ambitious thing yet. And yeah, no surprise, because we love Aeon's End, we are loving Legacy of Gravehold, and I cannot wait to finish it. Okay, all right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, that was it for expansions. Would you like to hear about the games we played? If so, let's continue with my number 8 game of the month, Primal. Now, this is another paid preview. The Kickstarter is still live right now, and it is blowing up. This is a monster hit. And with good reason. It is a very, very sharp boss fight. Like Aeon's End before it, this is a game where every time you play, the whole session is just going to be one big epic boss fight where everybody works cooperatively to take down an unstoppable behemoth by using lots of really clever card combos. And this game really pushes those card combos to an 11. Really makes for super strong cooperation between players. You're constantly using your movement to draw the attention of the bad guy, to protect each other, or giving cards to each other, or all kinds of stuff. And I have to say, this game has probably one of, if not the best board game AI systems I have ever seen. The way these bosses make their decisions of what they're going to do, and how we can see what's coming and we can make choices deciding what it is that they might do in response to our actions, it is absolutely brilliant. I love it to pieces. And what surprised me, I didn't think Jen was going to like it, but she liked it a lot too. We both had a fantastic time. And check out my run through to see why. And like I said, it's on Kickstarter right now. Remember, that was a paid preview, but oh my gosh, so fantastic. My number 8 of the month, Primal. Then we go on to my number 7 of the month, The Coldest Night. And you might be saying, if you're used to my roundups, number 6, number 7, number 8, what's going on? Where's number 15 and 16 and 17? Folks, I spent a lot of time in January playing a legacy game. Aeon's End really sucked up a lot of time. So, sorry we don't... I think I'm talking about 16 games today, if I recall correctly. So still, that's a decent number, thanks to Shay stepping in. But anyway, enough of all that. Let's talk about my number 7, The Coldest Night, which is something I love. Cooperative imperfect communication games. Ever since Hanabi came out and was such a big smash hit, we have been seeing more and more clever uses of this idea where I know what I need to do, And I think I know what you need to do, but I don't know what resources you have on hand, and you don't know what I have. And we can talk about strategy, but we cannot share what we have in our hands. And that makes for really fun, interesting second guessing and trying to drop hints based on what I do and all that. What is the game itself, though? It's the coldest night, and we are trapped in a snow-swept cabin, completely cut off from the rest of the world, and we're going to freeze to death if we can't keep a fire burning all night long. So we have a handful of just stuff we found in this cabin that we're throwing onto the fire. But the fire is constantly dwindling and going out. And so we have to be very, very smart about what cards we burn. Because some you need to have a really hot fire. Some you don't. Some unlock special powers and whatnot. And if you're not really careful about how you play, you will get frostbite, which affects players with debilitating things that really slow you down. It's a super clever game. Somebody in the comments for my video for it, actually, I thought made a really good, drawing parallels to, what is the World War One game? The Grizzled. This is kind of like a lighter, more gateway version of the Grizzled that you could teach anybody how to play, get up and running really quick, play in a fraction of the time, but still have incredible, tense, nail-biting decisions. Sometimes it's going really well. Okay, but then sometimes, why did you play that card? Why? That ruins everything. Oh my gosh, now I have to rethink everything. And again, you can talk about the strategy of what's already on the table, but you can't talk about what's in your hand. So you can just maybe you played that card because of this, and maybe that means I should do that, and it's great. We really liked it a lot, and it's amazing to me just how incredibly thematic this game is. Even though it's nothing more than a deck of cards and some tokens, I mean, you feel the frost, biting into your fingers and just, melting into your core as, the fire slowly, slowly dwindles. Really impressive game. My number 7 of the month, The Coldest Night. Then we go on to number 6. Seven Bridges, which it bugs me. I should have made this my number 7, so it could be number 7, Seven Bridges. But nope, it's number 6, Seven Bridges, which is a roll-and-write game, which is actually designed by a real-world cartographer who loves making maps. That is his career. And he decided to make a roll-and-write all about strolling around, what was it, Konigsberg, I believe, by rolling dice and then using these special custom dice to be able to trace a path around the city to visit all the landmarks and, the lovely parks and cross all 7 bridges of the city and score lots of points. It's really clever, and I very much appreciate that he, the designer, is so personally invested in maps because it's what he does professionally. He tried to make the map for this game, the sheet of paper we're writing on, accurate to the real world. It didn't change the world to fit the game. He designed the game around the world, and it's a blast. We had a very fun time playing it. We actually played it several times out on the couch, because that's one of the great things about roll-and-writes. If everybody can see the dice, you don't have to sit at a table to play, and it is sharp. Watch my solo run-through I did of it. It's a fun solo game, too, as roll-and-writes often are. It's my number 6 of the month, Seven Bridges. Then we go on to number 5, Meeples and Monsters. Now, this is a paid preview for a game that I don't think goes on Kickstarter until early March, actually. But the publisher got me a copy really, really early, and Jen and I played it, and I filmed it because I had to get in the mail and send it on because they're expecting a lot of reviewers. So you're going to get to hear a lot of opinions about this game before you have to decide if you want to back it on Kickstarter. Here's an early opinion from me. It's great. Jen and I really loved it. It is a bag building worker placement game where our bag is full of these really cool little custom meeples that represent shamans and warriors and stuff like that. And we're filling up the bag. At the beginning of the round, we draw a certain number of them. And when it's our turn, we can deploy them to different areas of the city to train them to become more powerful or to fight off monsters that are invading the city or to build up the city and create more worker placement spots that other players could use. And it's over the course of the game, just building a bigger, better, stronger bag. Getting rid of all the peasants. You don't want peasants in your bag unless you're trying to build stuff. But if you get them out of the way so you can get your hero meeples that much quicker, you can, level up to be able to take on the big bosses, the boss monsters at the end of the game. It's a blast to play. It's just smooth, really streamlined, really fun. And it's a great example of bag building and worker placement. Great presentation. It just looks lovely. And those little meeples with, they're not stickered, they're silkscreen, I believe, at least my prototype is. They are awesome too. We really enjoyed this one quite a bit. It's a fun, fast, competitive race where everybody's trying to be the greatest hero ever while avoiding, if you're too heroic, the peasants will swarm you and then you've got more peasants in your bag that you got to get rid of. Clever ideas abound in my number 5 of the month, Meeples and Monsters. Then we go on to number 4, Funfair, which was a paid run through I did for the publisher. And I gotta say, folks, I was a bit trepidatious about this because this is actually a sequel to a game that came out a couple of years ago called Unfair, which was widely respected as one of the sharper, Race for the Galaxy inspired card combo tableau engine building games out there. Really sharp, very well loved, but Unfair features, it's in the title, a healthy dollop of player versus player attacking and negative effects that can really smack people around. And I was just never that interested in playing it, even though it does come with variant rules that let you take out the negative stuff. But from what I've seen, that kind of unbalances the game if you're not willing to play Unfair really aggressively. So I've always admired it from a distance, but decided I'd never play it. But it's got a sequel now from the same publisher designer, and they changed it from Unfair to Funfair because all of the nasty negative interactions have been taken out, and Jen and I love it! Oh my gosh. I almost feel like I should play Unfair so I can do a contrast and compare to a video to all of the industry about how I... Look, you don't need to litter your game with a bunch of silly, oh, I steal your stuff, I smash your stuff, ha ha ha, isn't this fun? You can make a game just as rich and compelling and interesting without all of that, because that's what Funfair is, and Jen and I loved it. Now, to be fair, it's a bit less heavy and shorter, too. It plays for 6 rounds instead of 8, and I think the overall gameplay is a little bit more streamlined. They took out loans and some of the other more elaborate, heavy elements. It's not quite a gateway game. It's probably a gateway plus, but it's a blast. And I forgot to mention, what are we doing? We're building Funfairs. We have a handful of cards, and we get very, very, very few opportunities in this game to either build these cards by discarding other cards and paying money so that we can start unlocking combos and point scoring opportunities and stuff like that, or we can just run our fair and get more money so that we can build more stuff later. And one of the great things about is you have so much flexibility because you have your hand of cards to play, but there's also a public display of cards. You could play from there or from your hand, and there is just so much variety in this game. Not as much as Unfair, but still enough variety to keep you coming back for days, and we loved it to pieces. Go check out my run through to see why. Jen and I were blown away by this. It's way too early to say, but this might be one of my favorite games of 2021. Of course, it's way too early to say. I've played less than a half dozen 2021 games, but Funfair is amazing. And number 4 of the month. Okay, then let's talk about number 3, Hollertau, which is sadly a 2020 game that I did not get a chance to play until 2021. I say sadly because if I had gotten a chance to play Hollertau in November or December, it would have been in my top 10 games of the year. Now don't worry, I am going to update my top 10 games of the year in April or May, and Hollertau will rank very, very high because it is very, very good. The latest big box, Uwe Rosenberg designed farming simulation, worker placement style game. What does this one do to separate from Agricola and Caverna and, Fields of Arl and Feast for Odin and all the other games he's done in this genre? There's a bunch of neat ideas in here. I think the most important one, though, is objective cards. And, objective cards are a pretty common staple in Euros, but in this game, you drown in very quick, easy-to-do objectives. You get a handful of ones that are very, very tough that you build up over the course of the game to try to do, but you're constantly getting an influx of these little tiny ones. And the trick to winning, to playing well, is finding ways to combine these. Oh, if I complete this objective by gathering these resources or giving up these resources or whatever, that will give me what I need to complete this one. And if I complete that one, it'll get me that one, and that one will give me 3 steps, and you can create very fun and satisfying, compelling objective chains, and it's a blast. We were really blown away. And then on top of that, the worker placement is fairly fresh and interesting as well. It's kind of similar to Feast for Odin, but not exactly. People can't freeze you out. It's just that actions get more and more expensive, so you want to get to an action early when it only costs you 1 worker, but if you don't, if somebody beats you to it, you could go there with 2 workers or even 3 workers later, and that creates a very, very high level of anticipation. Will I be able to get in there? Will I be able to do what I need to do? And also, the way you score progress of your little hamlet your suburb of Hallertau, or no, Hallertau is the region, and so you have villages in Hallertau, is a very, very clever system too, where you're trying to invest in these different technologies, and once all the technologies have increased, then your overall standing goes up and you get more workers. And so a big part of the game is about focusing on whether you are going to diversify or focus like a laser, depending on what, and both are valid. Oh, and another thing that's great about it too, it's a farming simulation that actually simulates crop rotation, which is great, and it's so simple and elegant the way it does it. I mean, this, I think, is Uwe's best game since Agricola, or his best big box game. I personally find it more compelling than Fields of Odin, which I think is, you know, blasphemy for some people. But I had some problems with Fields of Odin that you needed an expansion to take care of. Hallertau is just amazing right out of the box, and it's my number 3 of the month, which is crazy to me because there's something even better. And what would that be? My number 2 is Cloud Age. And this is, like Hallertau, this is a game that I wish I'd had a chance to play in December, or by December, because this also climbs its way very, very high into my top 10 games of 2020. And so you will be hearing more about it when I update my 2020 best of in, you know, halfway through the year. And it's great. It's from Alexander Pfister. So no surprise I'm going to love it. I love what that man's got cooking. And this is a post-apocalypse, ruined landscape, the world is desertified, kind of Mad Max. But instead of riding around, you know, using the guzzoline to drive our monster trucks, we are high above the clouds in energy-efficient blimps, going from, or dirigibles, Zeppelins, going from one city to another, trying to build up enough strength to be able to fight off all the militias that have taken over all the cities, and also harvesting goods along the way. And the game has this brilliant system for harvesting goods. When you get to a city and you decide, oh, I'm going to try and get some tech or some solar power or some more project cards, whatever, you can say, well, this is what I want to go for. And you can see the card that says how much of each resource there is in this region of the city. But you can't see the actual numbers. And you might think, oh, I really want to get some solar power here. But it looks, because what you can see is there's a literal cloud that is covering up the center of the card that tells you how much of whatever is going to be there. And so you can gamble and you can guess and say, well, I think there's probably more water to be gathered here, because water is the most important resource in this future. There's more water here than energy. So I should probably go for water, but I can't be sure because I can't see, because I'm literally floating above the clouds. I can't see through them to know what's there. And so I have to take my best educated guess looking at what I can see of the city. And what's more important, after I make my guess, all the other players. This is a game where when I do a worker placement action, everybody gets to do it. I just get first dibs in the better version of it. So then I take what I think is going to be the best, and then everybody else jumps on, and then we reveal. We actually land the clouds part, and we see what did everybody get. This is a blast. It's so fun and simple and elegant and so compelling. That, you know, I absolutely adore it. And then on top of that, thematically, what we absolutely love is this is a game where we're trying to bring greenery back to the world. We're trying to bring the world back from the brink, and my wife loved that. It has a strong ecological message, and that message is borne out through a narrative campaign. Yes, once again, Alexander Pfister is giving us campaign-driven storytelling Euro games, and I love it. Like, I loved it in Maracaibo and Blackout and Oh My Goods, and I just continue to love it here, and everything about this game is fantastic. It's a fun, fast, compelling little race game with some very neat ideas and a great storyline. Oh, and by the way, folks, if you do actually go watch my run-through, always watch the Klingon subtitles turned on. I made a goof. I did a solo run-through, and the AI is supposed to make the first move, not me. Just a little goof, but you already knew that because you watched the Klingon subtitles, right? Like a good Rotto fan. Anyway, though, that's my number 2 of the month, Cloud Age. And it's so good. What could possibly eclipse it? It's another 2020 game. Project Elite 2020, which we only just played a few days ago. And oh my gosh, I loved Project Elite to pieces back when I covered it when it was on Kickstarter in, what, 2014, I think? And then when I got the original first edition of it in 2016, it was fantastic. But, you know, there was always kind of a cloak of sadness around Project Elite, because there were some production problems that caused backers of it to get so virulent and so angry that it kind of depressed the developers so much they decided, yeah, you know what, we're just not going to support this game anymore. And I thought Project Elite was dead. because very angry people shouted and shouted and shouted until the developer, who loved this game like his baby, just like, it just made him sad to think about it. But fortunately, another publisher, Cool Mini or not, approached Artipia Games, which is, I understand it, the help of Tom Vassell. So I doff my cap to Tom for helping make this happen, and said, look, we can take this on, we can reprint it, we can make it better, stronger, faster. And in 2020, we got the new updated version with tons of expansion content, and oh my gosh, it's even better than it was before, and we already loved it to pieces. It's much more streamlined, some of the weird rough edges have been shaved off, and so you can really just focus on the real-time cooperative alien versus space marine fighting with, you know, the real-time sections and then the strategic sections bouncing back and forth. The production is phenomenal. Absolutely top of class. And it comes with a bunch of new playable characters and more mission types than were in the original game as well. So overall, it is, I already thought the game was a high 8. It's now a low 9 for me, and I have very few 9 out of 10 rated games. Currently, this is my number one game of 2020, although I don't know if I want to consider it a 2020 game, because it did really come out in 2016. I'm still trying to figure that out for when I have to redo. Give me your feedback. Do you think I should include it in my redo, or is it really a remake and I should focus on completely new games when I do my top 10s of the year? Regardless, all that aside, what I will say is it was my number one game I played in the month of January, Project Elite 2020. Oh my goodness, I love it. Love it, love it, love it. And I mean, I had a great game. It was a phenomenal month. It was a bit short, like I said, only 14 or 15 games that we played, but still, that was like one every other day that we were learning, and so we were great. But I think February is going to be very intense. There's a bunch of Kickstarters that are coming. You'll find out more about that soon. I would actually point you to comingsoon.rado.com, but I can't update that yet because there is a super secret unannounced game, and I don't believe it's going to be announced for a couple more days. So it's at that point that I'll say, hey, by the way, coming soon, I'll be covering this thing that no one's ever heard of, and it's pretty amazing. Folks, that was it. That was, where are we? Oh, January 2021. A lot of fun games play, a lot of good times. And again, if you'd like to hear about some of the less good times, you can check out my latest podcast, Rado Talks Through. Follow the link in the show notes. And otherwise, folks, I'm going to end it right there. And as always, closing by saying thanks to the sponsorship of Fun Again Games. Have a nice day, everybody. Talk to you later. So long. Bye-bye.